Welcome to the Yoga Focus podcast. I'm Laura Gellner, a yoga therapist, occupational therapist, and the owner of Focused Wellness Therapeutics. I provide one-on-one yoga therapy sessions, small group therapeutic yoga, and online education for yoga teachers that is rooted in science. For more information, check out my website, lauragyoga.com. This episode is a segment from my online course, Anatomy of Yoga Part 3 on Udemy. This course is all about how to take the information we learn about anatomy and the human body and apply it to what we do as yoga teachers to actually craft sequences and classes that are anatomy informed. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and if you'd like to learn more about the course, there will be a link in the description below. Now we're moving in to look at the nervous system and some of the key components that we can pull in so that we are teaching in a way that works with the science and the structure and the function of the nervous system. This connection with the nervous system is one of the key things that really makes yoga very different from other movement systems. So if we're looking at just the physical practice of yoga, there's a very strong connection to the nervous system and self-regulation that a lot of people know from experience. They have felt it after a yoga practice, but they might not necessarily understand the underlying process that is making them feel that way. And I love bringing that to people's attention so they start to understand how yoga has this back and forth communication with their nervous system. The first one that I put on the list is using sensory input as a tool. You intuitively do this as a yoga teacher. You adjust the lights, you change the music, you maybe are using a scent in the room, like incense or a candle, depending on the class that you're teaching. All of that is sensory input that is helping you to create a specific experience for your students. And all of that input is going to lead you toward some sort of overall feeling. And very often in yoga, the feeling that we're trying to steer the students' nervous systems toward is relaxation, right? We want them to feel grounded, centered, and relaxed when they walk out of that room after our class. So we use sensory input that is going to help them to get to that point. Now the next one is talking about thinking of the nervous system and thinking about your class like the bell curve. And the bell curve really helps us to think about sequencing, right? There's a warm-up, which is a little bit less strenuous. It builds to a peak of usually more physical output, depending on the class, depending on the students, and then it tapers off into a cool down, and then down into a relaxation or a meditation toward the end. So your class is structured like a bell curve, but we also want to kind of think about the nervous system as a bell curve, where on one side there's too little input and the nervous system is kind of sleepy and bored. You come up to the center, and that's where there's optimal functioning. A lot of times we think of that as the flow state, where the student is completely engaged. You are giving them a sequence that matches their skill level well, so they feel like they're being challenged, but they're not going so far over to the other end where they feel strain or they feel overwhelmed. So the other thing that I like to think about on the bell curve is that we want to keep that state moving. We don't want to get stuck in one state or another. What happens sometimes is if we have experienced chronic stress for months or years or maybe our whole life, we can get stuck in that nervous system experience of sympathetic dominance. So the stress response is there all the time. And we know from studying the nervous system that the stress response is supposed to be a short-term response that kicks in when we need it, when we have to keep ourselves safe, or when we have to respond to a very high demand, high stress situation. And then as soon as that situation is resolved, we go right back into parasympathetic rest and restore. That's the healthy fluctuation that our nervous system goes through. What happens is, after years of chronic stress, we lose that flexibility. So a lot of students are going to be walking into the room in a stress response from work, from home, from pandemic, from any number of things that they have experienced. And yoga can be an amazing tool to help them develop that nervous system flexibility, that when everything is okay, their nervous system can go into a relaxation response. For some students, the first time they feel truly relaxed is when they're on their yoga mat in a class that is designed very specifically for them, and they actually get that feeling of, oh, that's what it feels like to be relaxed. I haven't felt that in a long time. So that's the power. When we structure a class well, when we do a good job of using sensory input and creating an atmosphere in that practice space that makes people feel safe, they can actually experience relaxation, maybe for the first time in a long time. And then that opens the door to creating that experience of wellness where the nervous system is now flexible. It is going to adapt to a stress response when it's needed, and then it will go back into a relaxation response when everything is going well. That is a very important cornerstone for human health, being able to have that flexibility in the nervous system. So then number three is teaching about nervous system awareness. And in therapy circles or sometimes with children, you will learn the question of how is your engine running, right? It's kind of a very simple way of thinking about, well, how is my nervous system? Is it revving high? Is it revving low? Is it stalled? You can kind of think of it like a vehicle. And that works really well for children to kind of identify how they're feeling. It starts to create a connection of self-inquiry, of asking yourself, how do I really feel right now? And then self-awareness of identifying specific key factors of muscle tension, mind moving quickly, not being able to settle, kind of those key things that are saying like, oh, okay, I think I'm a little agitated and nervous right now, or I'm a little tired right now. It helps you to start to connect the dots within your body of, how do I feel? What information is telling me that I feel that way? What's the communication between my body and my nervous system that's actually making me think, oh, I'm tired, or oh, I'm anxious? That self-awareness is the kind of foundation that we need in order to make any sort of changes or adjustments. So that's a key piece that we can help our students to understand, just paying attention and having that awareness. Then we go into number four, which is the next step, which is self-regulation. So here is where we actually empower the student to say, okay, you started with awareness, you used your self-inquiry process to say, how do I really feel right now? And the information that you got back told you that you're a little tense, you're a little bit agitated, and maybe it's the evening and you're trying to wind down to go to bed. So the self-regulation practice in that would be, okay, I know that doing the mat work at the end of my yoga practice really helps to settle me. And I feel grounded when I do some supine twists and some forward bending. So let me take out my yoga mat, do some of those poses, focus on a slow exhale so I feel very settled. And then maybe I'll just do a period of stillness and focus on grounding. That practice of giving your body that input to bring about the feeling of relaxation and settling is the process of self-regulation. It's like feeding input to your nervous system to have this desired outcome. It's something that we all do every day, but when you actually shine the light of awareness on that process and you pay attention to what you do when you have different feelings, and sometimes that can really help us to uncover some habits or processes that are not serving us well, like staying up too late scrolling through your phone or reaching for coffee or caffeine when you really need a break, or leaning too heavily on alcohol when you feel like you are stressed or anxious. So we can start to uncover those processes that are happening mostly unconsciously at sometimes, but that's so much of what we're doing in yoga is making that conscious, bringing it into our awareness so that we know that it's happening. Number five is using the yogic tools of input. So that's what I was just saying about picking a pose, picking a movement, picking a breath. In that same scenario, if I was feeling a little bit tense and anxious and I knew I needed to go to bed soon, I would not take out my mat and start doing sun salutations and breath of fire, because that would push me in the opposite direction. So it's gaining that awareness. And one of the things I tell students to pay attention to when they're doing their practice in a group is what technique has a certain effect on you. If you do a certain technique and it makes you feel a little anxious, take note of that. If you do a certain pose and you feel like it really helps to relax the tension in your back or make you feel very calm, take notice of that so that you can kind of file it away. And then at some point in the future, you're going to need that as a tool. And you're going to say, okay, I'm having trouble focusing right now. I'm trying to get work done. I can't focus. Let me do 2 minutes of alternate nostril breathing, and then I'm going to come back and see if I can focus better. Because you're using that tool, that input to the nervous system, to shift the state of the nervous system into where you need it to be at that moment in time. It really becomes like this whole incredible toolbox that you can use throughout your day that is so, so helpful. Number six is teaching breathing ratios. And this goes right along the same lines. When we are learning pranayama and when we're teaching pranayama, we're thinking about the four parts of the breath, the inhale, the hold at the top of the inhale, or the pause at the top of the inhale, the exhale, and the pause at the bottom of the exhale. So there's 4 points of our breath that we can manipulate each of those points to different numbers and different ratios to have a desired effect. So if we do a longer, slower exhale, usually, not for everybody, but usually that will have the effect of calming the nervous system down. If we do short, quick, choppy breaths, like breath of fire, that is very stimulating and alerting to the nervous system. So we can teach our students the ratios. Inhale two, exhale two, kind of quick in and out, or breath of fire is like inhale one, exhale one. Very quick inhale, exhale is going to be very stimulating. And then the opposite of that would be maybe an inhale for four and an exhale for six. And then you can start to play around with holds depending on if you want to inhale and hold or exhale and hold. But once you understand the way that you can manipulate that ratio to have a desired effect on your energy and on your prana, that becomes a really valuable tool for you and your students to have that desired effect. It goes right back into that process of noticing how you feel, figuring out how you need to feel, and going into self-regulation of, okay, I'm going to give myself this input to help steer my nervous system in that particular direction. It can be really very empowering. Instead of feeling like you're being dragged around by your nervous system here and there and you have no control over the way that you feel, it actually helps you to start to feel empowered that you can use certain tools to have a desired outcome. Number seven is the idea that trauma-informed yoga is human-informed yoga. It's a reminder that if you're standing in front of a room of 10 people, each of those people has experienced different levels of trauma, different traumatic experiences through their life, right? Being human, we don't get through this process without experiencing loss and hardship, in addition to all of the wonderful things that we get to experience in this lifetime. But understanding that people can have some reactivity to certain things, and a lot of that will have to do with trauma that they've experienced in the past. And as yoga teachers, a lot of people find themselves in that room because they're trying to navigate that space of difficult emotions, of things that are coming up in their body, things that they're feeling that's uncomfortable. A lot of times they find themselves in the yoga space because that's what we will look for when we're having those struggles and we're trying to learn a way to help regulate all of that. So it's important to keep in mind that some people might not want to close their eyes at certain points because that might not feel safe for them. It's also why I prefer to teach in a way of self-inquiry, of letting the student be more empowered, letting them feel like the guide, and making sure that they understand that there's nothing that they have to do, and they do not have to allow me to touch them or do adjustments. If they prefer not to have adjustments or not for me to touch them at any point in the class, that is 100% okay. And it is not something to be embarrassed about or ashamed about. It's your choice in that yoga space so that you get the practice that you need. So a lot of those things and understanding just kind of the day-to-day functioning of people who have been through traumatic experiences and seeing how that's going to impact the way that you teach your yoga class. All right, number 8 is vagus nerve stimulation. And the vagus nerve is the nerve that goes down to a lot of our internal organs and is very closely connected to how our body puts into action the relaxation response. It's what sends the signals of relaxation to the vital organs. So in yoga, we will often do specific techniques to stimulate the vagus nerve, to make the vagus nerve function better so that we can move into that relaxation response. That goes back to the nervous system flexibility. If we are stuck in sympathetic activation, we are stuck in a stress response because of the input that we have been getting, doing specific exercises or techniques that will stimulate the vagus nerve can help us to move toward a relaxation response more quickly and more effectively. My personal favorite one that I use all the time is humming. Strong vibration through the neck and through the throat. It's one of the reasons why singing and being in the car and humming and all of that kind of stuff helps you to feel more grounded. You probably have done it intuitively because you figured out that that made you feel better. But in yoga, we'll do breaths that incorporate humming or oming. Chanting creates a lot of vibration through the throat, which is very helpful for stimulating the vagus nerve and telling the nervous system that everything is safe. We can go into a rest, relax, and restore state. All right, number 9 is including little bits of positive psychology, such as gratitude practice, working on positive self-talk. These are habits that we can help our yoga students to learn. And gratitude is a big practice in yoga, even if it's just coming onto your mat at some point in mountain pose and pausing for a moment and thinking about things that you are grateful for in your life. It's about creating the habit of strengthening our positive thought patterns and our positive focus so that those habits get stronger. Whatever we practice, we get better at. So we want to help our students to figure out those ways of bringing in positive emotions when they feel like that's appropriate. Now, this is balanced out by number 10, which is being aware of what we call spiritual bypassing, which is using spiritual practices to avoid uncomfortable feelings or experiences. It's like completely just bypassing that experience that would be uncomfortable through spiritual means. So saying, toxic positivity is a big part of this. When you see signs that say positive vibes only, the reality is that we always have the yin and the yang. And this is something that I like to talk to my students about, is we have the highs and the lows of life. We have the good and the bad. We have experiences that are joyful and we have experiences that are painful. And if we block out or try to push or shove away experience of sadness or grief or difficulty, that is going to fester and it is going to eventually impact us in different ways. The healthier way of facing these things is shining the light of awareness. And sometimes that might mean referring somebody to a healthcare professional that can guide them through being able to look at their sadness and being able to look at their grief. So one of the things that we can do is encourage our students to spend time and seek out mental health professionals like psychologists and therapists who can help them through those processes, because the way that we deal with our emotions and the way that we work through difficult life challenges is going to impact our health tremendously. In the past, there's been a lot of stigma and pushback and resistance to mental health awareness, and I think that is starting to dissolve finally. People are paying more attention to how important mental health is, but in a lot of wellness circles and yoga studios, sometimes you will still see this process of spiritual bypassing or toxic positivity, where it's you're only allowed to talk about good things. You're not allowed to bring in any bad experiences, when we know that that's not the reality of being human. That's not the fullness of the human experience. So if somebody just lost a loved one or is going through a bad divorce or these things that are going to bring up really difficult emotions, to say to them, no, positive vibes only, we don't want to talk about, or we don't want to hear about the difficulty that you're going through, that causes a divide, that causes a separation. And that's very much the opposite of what we are trying to do in yoga. In yoga, we are trying to bring together and we are trying to create connection, whether that is with happiness or with sadness. It's two sides of the coin. So make sure that if you recognize patterns of spiritual bypassing or toxic positivity, take note of that. Understand that that is not the healthy way for us to face difficult situations. A lot of people get onto the yogic path and think like, oh, I'm supposed to be happy and joyful and everything is great all the time. And that's just not true. Actually, sometimes it's harder because now you're paying more attention and you're not distracting yourself from some of the painful emotions. So sometimes it can actually get more challenging when you are on this path of awareness. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. And I like to talk to my students about that periodically to remind them that the full scope of human emotions and the full scope of awareness is all important. It is all part of the human experience. And the part of owning a human nervous system, a very complex human nervous system. Thank you for being here on the Yoga Focus podcast. I'm Laura Gellner. If you would like to stay connected to more yoga resources, you can follow me on Instagram at Laura G Yoga. I have many YouTube videos at Laura Gellner, The Yoga Focus Method, and you can find links to my book, Yoga Therapy at the Wall, and all of my online courses at my website, lauragyoga.com. Thanks so much for being here.